Could I, will it be up if I turn it down? Okay, thank you. Well, hello. I am so honored to have come. I have learned so much at this conference. It has been something that I will be talking about for weeks when I get back with my staff in Oakland, California. We always have such a good time at staff meeting talking about the people we've met and the things that we've learned at various conferences we've attended. I think this will take up a couple of staff meetings because I have learned so much. I am Angela Glover Blackwell, and I'm going to be talking about how we really can create a central place and role for community engagement in the policymaking arena. Now, the organization that I work for is PolicyLink, and our mission is to advance economic and social equity through policy, and to do that from the wisdom, voice, and experience of people who are working for change in their local communities. People often ask why we have taken on trying to do policy in that way, and I will tell you that it is hard to do. It is much easier to come up with a good policy idea, walk the halls of Congress or your state house and try and get it in place, than to work with local communities, engage local community in policy, make sure the policy reflects the wisdom, and that the community is informed and engaged enough to hold the whole process accountable. That is a much harder process. But the reason that PolicyLink is focused on doing policy precisely in that way is because those of us who started PolicyLink came out of the community building movement. You heard Jody say that before I went to the Rockefeller Foundation, I worked at the Urban Strategies Council in Oakland. Started the Urban Strategies Council in 1987. And a number of similar initiatives started around the country. And what we all had in common is that we weren't providing direct services. We weren't building houses. So we weren't part of the community development movement. We weren't service providers. What we were doing was we were creating community building intermediaries, organizations in community that could help gather data, work with residents to identify what the issues were, do reconnaissance around the country to find out what was working, expose residents and policymakers and leaders to what was working, work with them to develop policy that would make things better, and then be advocates to make sure that those policies actually got put in place. And to do that always with residents and asking the question, how do you solve these problems in ways that you leave something behind, that you build greater capacity? We began to call the work that we were doing community building, and we felt that we were on to something. When I say community building, what do I mean? I'm referring to continuous, self-renewing efforts by residents and professionals engaged in collective action aimed at improving lives, creating greater societal equity, and new standards and expectations for life and community. That's what I mean when I say community building. And we actually felt that we were onto something very important, but that everything we were creating in our communities just stayed there and went away after the funding was no longer there, when you had a change at the top in terms of mayor. And we recognized that what we lacked was an institution that was devoted to doing policy from a community building perspective. And that's why we started PolicyLink. So this notion of doing policy from the wisdom, voice, and experience of people who are working for change in their local communities is essential to the way we think about making policy. And the policy that we're trying to make is equitable policy. How do we achieve equity? When I say equity, what do I mean? Just and fair inclusion into a society in which everybody can participate and everybody can prosper. That's what we mean when we talk about equity. And we're trying to achieve equity in the context of a country, because we're working in the United States, in which place matters a lot. As a matter of fact, what we say is that where you live is literally a proxy for opportunity. It determines how long you'll live, how well you'll live, whether or not you'll get to have a good education, whether you live near a job, whether you live in a natural job network, whether you live near transportation that can connect you to a job, if you're lucky enough to own a home, whether the home you own actually can provide you with any wealth or resources if you have an emergency or want to start a business. It's all determined by where you live. And so as we think about how to achieve equity in the context of place and to lift that up in the policy, it is so clear to us that authentic community engagement is absolutely essential. Authentic community engagement is essential. Now, we have talked about a lot of things here. We have talked about water and housing and transportation and green jobs and hunger and climate change. We've had a vast discussion, and I think the thing that we will all remember about the discussion is the various stories of community struggle that have taken place, where communities have just taken charge of figuring out how to solve these problems. And the stories that will remain in our minds the most are the ones where the community was the driver, where the residents actually helped to define the problem, to define the solution, to be able to fight for the solution. We can't stop this community engagement process once we get a pilot in place, once we get a program in place. We have to take it all the way to policy. Because without policy, we are forever repeating. We're forever engaging in a process of an adversarial process to achieve everything we want. Now, you've heard I'm a public interest lawyer, and I can throw salvos with the best of them. But I do believe that at some point you have to stand on a platform of having achieved something as you continue to spiral up. And policy is that platform. Policy is that platform. It doesn't solve the whole problem, but we understand that. We understand we ought to be doing that at scale. Now we need to understand the next thing. The policy is not authentic or sustainable if you don't get it through a community engagement process. I want to share just a couple of stories with you about how communities do this. There are lots of communities in California that are unincorporated. They're not part of the cities, and the ones that are the poorest, we refer to them as colonias in California. They mostly are inhabited by Latinos, often people who have come to areas doing agricultural work and end up living in poor communities, and they're not part of cities. They often have problems with water and sewage. There are no sidewalks. The schools are inadequate. These unincorporated areas just really are living without the basics that they ought to have. Some unincorporated areas get annexed into cities. They're the ones that the cities want. They're never the ones where people of color live. They're never the ones that are poor. They're always the ones that are a little more affluent. So what you have left behind are these areas that are suffering from all the things I talked about: lack of safe drinking water, lack of quality septic systems, no storm drainage. And so Policy Link, the organization that I work with, joined with California Rural Legal Assistance to work in those communities to help the residents to be able to understand what was going on in the communities. Their research helped to inform exactly what the issues were, to help them craft solutions for what needed to happen, and to build up their awareness and voice to be able to demand through getting legal representation, by holding forums in their community, and by putting forward legislation and working with elected officials to draw attention to what has happened. And we have seen about five pieces of legislation move forward to begin to change the annexing process, to really focus on what the county's responsibilities are. They're making a real difference, and that difference has been made because the residents are engaged. I'm sure that you all have heard about health impact assessments, and they're very important to be able to ask the question when a policy is being put forward, when a plan is being put forward, what's the impact on health? We've been involved in several health impact assessments, and what we have found is that a health impact assessment that doesn't also ask the equity question can often miss the mark. Just to look at health without looking at equity does not get you equity. As a matter of fact, I would say nothing gets you equity if you don't look for equity, if you don't demand equity, if you don't fight for equity. You need to be explicit about equity. We have been working in the Twin Cities of Minnesota, Minneapolis, St. Paul, because they're getting light rail that's going to run right from Minneapolis into St. Paul, creating light rail in a commercial corridor. It actually goes through some of the poorest parts of those towns. And we were called in by a community organizing group, Isaiah, that actually does community organizing out of a faith tradition. And we were called in to help them have a voice in the health impact assessment, so equity would be right there. Working with the organizers, we did studies. We helped them to be able to analyze exactly what was going to happen, so they had a parallel process to the one that was happening that wasn't looking at equity so much. The two merged together. The equity issues got brought forward. And what they figured out was that not only did they need to move transit near the corridor, so they needed to make the transit stops would actually be places where people could live, so they could live near these transit stops. It would be good for health. But in doing that, the community made it clear that if you don't secure affordability, it's not going to be good for them. Because you may have a wonderful transit stop, there may be people who are living near it, but those places become more desirable. The housing becomes more expensive, and in the end, people who were low income get pushed out. And so because the community was there raising the equity issue, they have been able to get inclusionary zoning as part of the whole plan. And inclusionary zoning requires that special attention is made to make sure that some of the housing will be affordable. As we step back and we looked at the way that this has happened in the Twin Cities, it became very clear that you needed a methodology to bring the community voice to the health impact assessment work in order to have equity there. Because I could give you example after example where communities have done health impact assessments and low-income communities, communities of color, often aren't even considered when you ask those questions. As we think about what is essential to be able to make sure that the policies are sustainable and effective, one thing that we feel is that it's important right at the beginning to get the community helping to define the problem. That problems get defined differently depending on where you sit. And people who are feeling the impact every day often bring a different assessment. It's essential that people are also involved in designing the solution, because the solution is going to be more authentic if it comes out of community. That we have to make sure that people are involved who are going to be impacted by these decisions in helping to craft policy, and that their voices and their engagement actually help to bring the policy into fruition. When that happens, it usually is better for everybody. Let me tell you a couple of stories about that that are probably familiar to you. We all are probably familiar with the cutouts in the sidewalk that allow people in wheelchairs to be able to move from sidewalk to sidewalk through cities. Those happen, they certainly happen in the United States because of the advocacy of people in wheelchairs, people with disabilities, making sure that the promise of full engagement, the promise of equal opportunity could be realized. We have laws that say you can't discriminate against people with disabilities, but to actually make that real, you had to remove the practical barriers. And one of the practical barriers of being able to get around and get to work was being able to maneuver through a city. So that's why they're there. How many of you have had your movement eased when you were pulling on one of those roller suitcases and you could just go right from sidewalk to sidewalk without having to lift up that contraption? How many of you have ever pushed a baby carriage or a stroller and found it was so much easier to maneuver because of those cutouts in the sidewalk? How many of you have been or have seen workers pulling carts or pushing wagons who had their work eased because of those cutouts in the sidewalk? And how many people who've had young children learning how to ride bicycles have had your mind put at ease when your children were traversing the city from sidewalk to sidewalk rather than riding in the street? The contention I have is that when you solve problems from the point of view of those who are most vulnerable, you solve them for everyone. When you solve problems from the point of view of those who have everything, you solve them for the point of view of those who have everything. That affirmative action is another one. Affirmative action happened because African Americans didn't have access to higher education and certain jobs. And even though there was a promise of equal opportunity, that promise could not be fulfilled unless we took affirmative steps to make sure we reached out to those who were being left behind. So we got affirmative action in medical school, in law school, in fire departments, in police departments. And while many African Americans were able to get those jobs, once we opened up the process, the people who got the most from affirmative action were white women. You had more white women getting into law school, getting into medical school, getting into police departments, getting into fire departments. And what's important about that is that white women and Latinos and many people who had not felt that they could challenge the system, it hadn't occurred to them that the way that things were being done was basically unfair for everybody. You opened up opportunities. But it also opened opportunities for lots of white men in the United States who hadn't had access before because there was a system that they too had been locked out of. Affirmative action was certainly good for African Americans and Latinos, but it turned out to be an important thing for everybody in terms of opening up opportunity. When you solve problems for those who are most vulnerable, you solve them for everybody. We are at a point where we have to be able to make that our mantra, because we can't continue as a world, we can't continue as a nation, with the vast numbers of people being left behind who are being left behind. Our future depends on us developing a more equitable society. And we have to go beyond wonderful boutique programs. They're every place. I travel all over the United States. Occasionally I get to travel all over the world. I did it a lot when I was at the Rockefeller Foundation. And the thing that I am most impressed by, if you show me a problem, I can show you a community that has solved it. It's inevitable. If there's a problem, there's a community that has worked it out. What we do is we allow these jewels to just sit, to get covered over, to get forgotten, to lose their luster. And what we have to learn to do is to do policy work that carries the people side by side who understand this. We often do policy without being connected to those who have skin in the game. It's when the people who have skin in the game are there defining the problem, defining the solutions, fighting for the policy, and holding elected officials and others accountable after the policy is in place that we actually are able to make progress going forward. And so I have so enjoyed this conversation because, once again, I've seen the jewels. Once again, I've seen the islands of excellence. Once again, I've seen the people who warm my heart every day because there are so many good people across this country who are devoting their lives to solving these problems. We have to continue to do that because you can't do good policy if you don't have a good model of what it is you're trying to achieve. But the other thing we have to do is we have to all become policymakers. We have to all become leaders for policy, because when we get those policies in place with the authenticity that comes from doing it with those who have skin in the game, you have created a platform that allows you to keep spiraling forward, spiraling upward, getting the problem solved. Thank you. I just want to mention that this report is on the table. It's new from PolicyLink. It's called Why Place and Race Matter for Health. So I hope you'll take it and read it.